for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
What people don't understand is that that's Derek Kramer on the drums and Ben Tsujimoto blazing those hot riffs.
Mm-hmm.
His fingers just motoring up and down that fretboard.
Very nimble.
Very nimble. The nimble
Are you laying the bass line, Nick?
No, man. I'm just hanging out. Just hanging out. Soccer, it's a kick in the grass.
Ooh, I think somebody took that.
That's been taken.
Yep.
That's been taken. Ageless, if you will. It is the Football Club of Buffalo show. I'm Nick Mandola. Happy to be here along with @BN_soccer. Until further notice, that is Ben Tsujimoto on Twitter. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. Andy Edwards, my coworker at NBC Sports Pro Soccer Talk, will join us around 5:30 to recap everything that's going on in MLS. The season very much creeping up. Mm. It's one of the shortest off seasons going. I have some speculative things. I don't know if we'll get to them today when it comes to MLS, but I'm very interested in, Ben, the timing of the calendar. I understand why they won't ever be able to go to the traditional calendar, but I do kind of feel like they're missing out by not starting the season maybe a little bit earlier and doing what the Bisons do, where the teams from the north start off heavily on the road. But
and the argument the other day was that they should have a different timed winter break, or they should have some kind of a winter break to fall in line with the EPL?
Right.
Yeah, you can probably explain that better than I can, but it did seem like there's been all sorts of, and maybe this is the time of year to talk about these kind of things, like why is our schedule so different from what happens in Europe, and how does this affect us in, you know, players or the possibility of loans happening or something?
And it's more because I'm antsy to watch some primetime soccer, and we will be very quick with this topic. We will not dwell on Jordan Morris for the 1,000,000th time, but he did, in the last week, since we pretty much announced him as going to Werder Bremen, he is going to play for the Seattle Sounders.
True to his roots.
Yeah, well, they're heavily invested in him. I'm disappointed. I don't think it's an awful thing, but pretty disappointed in it. I think it'll be fun. It'll put more fun in our summers. It'll be good for him to be American-based. And until he either falls off the map or is still in MLS in 3 years, then until then, I can accept it.
So we get to see if he's the next great American striker, or do we see his path to becoming the next great American striker, which eventually happens in Europe?
Right. I think it's going to have to be something that happens. I don't know. I guess that's a very interesting question, and it fits in with Andy, who's going to be our guest a little bit later. Mm. What would it take for a great American striker it would say a lot for MLS, but to stay in MLS for his entire career, to be universally kind of renowned as, wow, that's a very good player. I'm sure it's happened in Mexico. I'm sure it's happened in other leagues. The Premier League, it's obviously happened in La Liga because there's money there and renown, et cetera. You don't have to leave. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how many players around the world are known as maybe the most prolific striker, because it's the most in-demand position in the world. How many players are known as the most prolific striker for their nation ever, but only played in their nation in modern history? Mm-hmm. I'm not talking the 70s when you didn't maybe leave your country as much. But it's an interesting question. Is that possible? Could he be better than Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey? Not that they're out-and-out strikers, but could he be better than them or Brian McBride without leaving the United States?
I think he has gifts that those players didn't have.
Sure. Could any player be that way? Maybe we should phrase it that way, without specifically Morris.
Can a player be like those guys without leaving the
U.S.? Can you see someone who's a rookie in the next couple of years spend 15 to 20 years or whatever it is in MLS and be, you know, kind of looked at around the world as, that guy was fantastic? Or does he have to go abroad?
Now he's got to go. I think the timeline for that not having to happen is probably maybe 10 years, maybe 5 to 10 years.
Maybe longer, right.
Yeah, and it was funny this week. I was reading, I think it was MLSsoccer.com, where they were talking to the LA Galaxy stars, like Steven Gerrard, I remember, for instance, and they're like, oh, I wish England would send more of their young players over to the U.S. And I just sort of like laughed at it. It was like, oh, I'm sure, like, this is on MLSsoccer.com, and they want young English players to come to the U.S., and Steven Gerrard says that's feasible. Is it feasible?
Well, I think there's a different crop. There's a different sort of experience that can be had here. To think that an Andros Townsend of a couple of years ago or Danny Ings of last year is going to try America before the Premier League seems silly. Mm-hmm. But a player who's opting between playing for Seattle Sounders and playing for Luton Town or Crawley Town or Town Town. No, I'm not making a joke there, but I think that you could see people maybe thinking about it. As we mentioned last week, the Bradley Wright Phillips, if he would have done this a little earlier, you know, he scored so many goals in League One, but hadn't really made a dent at any other level. Comes over here and he's fantastic.
I'm really interested in seeing what kind of loan agreements they can work out. Whether, because I saw today there was New York City FC. And
they did a couple last year as well.
Yeah, and Manchester City being connected is like, hey, this is sort of like our farm team per se. And it's different than being part of the Manchester City Academy on the other side. And I think that will limit some of the guys that New York City FC can get. But it, on the other hand, it works as a springboard for somebody like Jack Harrison. New York City FC's winding up to be their first draft pick, eventually maybe just making the natural leap over to City. So
I find him very interesting because you're looking at a guy who, I'm not telling you they thought he was going to be Wayne Rooney, but elected to leave Manchester United's academy to come to the United
States. Purely for the education, right, Nick?
Yes, clearly.
Yeah.
But no, he did it because people with accents have very, very much luck with the, much better luck with the opposite, well, whoever they're interested in, I should say.
Yeah, he basically wouldn't have to work for it.
Right,
Clear head start.
Clear head start from Jack Harrison. Smart move on his part. So there are a lot of interesting things that kind of fit in this momentum of what is American soccer, where are we going, et cetera. Today, I was kind of bamboozled, if you will. I was, that's not even the right word, I was baffled when I read that Ramirez, I don't know if you saw this,
Manny Ramirez?
No, just Ramirez.
Just Ramirez, okay.
From Chelsea. $30 million to China. At age 28.
Yeah.
Going from Chelsea to China. China has spent a lot of money. They bought four, as a nation. Chinese Super League teams bought four players from Corinthians who won Brazil. And it kind of shows you what MLS, I think, could be if it was just the richest people in America running soccer teams. Because China, I mean, that's a lot of money. Ramirez comes to MLS and it is a coup for the league.
Yeah.
So should it not be viewed, Ramirez going to China, as a bit of
a snub?
Yeah. Not that it has to be America.
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of interesting.
I think of Drogba taking that 1 year after Chelsea and going to the United Arab Emirates. It was Dubai, I think, right?
I want to say he ended up in China as well.
Was it China? Okay.
Guangzhou.
Yeah, okay.
Evergrande.
So then it was just really
I mixed
helps
languages there,
this helps my comparison really well because like there was a ton of money offered to him.
Yep.
And he could basically be a hero in China for a year, collect a ton of money, and then I think gradually he sort of was like, I mean, I'm sort of falling out of the international spotlight of soccer. I need to do something, and I think the move to the Impact made sense.
Yeah, David Villa taking the job at New York City FC, but going to Melbourne first in Australia. It is interesting where we slot in, where our expectations are as far as American soccer. So I think there's a lot of very interesting things going on right now, and as the transfer window comes to a close, we haven't seen Giasse Zarda's move, despite interest over there. Bruce Arena, in fact, has said he's not going anywhere.
Do you think it's his hair that they're a little worried about?
No, I would think that'd be a drawing point. Yeah. Very easy to spot for passes.
He does kind of look like a skunk.
Yes.
No
Dylan
offense,
Powers.
Giasse. Good-looking skunk.
Yeah, Dylan Powers from Colorado was on trial over there, and obviously Jordan Morris. It's going to be interesting to see because the point made about the national team a few years back was that the United States was succeeding over Mexico, which, let's face it, is going to be year in and year out the odds-on favorite to be the best CONCACAF rival, sheer population size in itself. But the thought was that it was going to be difficult for the United States to or Mexico to keep up with the U.S. because the U.S. had so many players at the time playing over in Europe. And we've talked about on the show before, that's completely flipped.
Yeah,
Mexico has, I believe, three players playing on Porto together, which is one of the reasons I was so excited about the Morris Johansson thing. But in any event, we'll have plenty of of talk to spend or time to spend on this discussion as time move forward. I think it being almost quarter after and Andy Edwards slated to join us at 5:30. What's the hot button issue for you, Ben? What's the number one thing in soccer that's been on your mind, things you want to talk about?
Things I want to talk about. I think the EPL is still kind of, this is a very slow time for soccer, and this is one thing that, like, even the soccer blog right now, soccer.buffalonews.com, has been kind of quiet just because everything I'm working on right now is long form-ish. So
sure.
It's like it takes a while to churn some of those things out. But that's basically my excuse for being lazy. but no, I still think it's the EPL. You know, you still see people waking up early on Saturday and Sunday morning, still tweeting very aggressively about whether it's Arsenal or City or United. Mm-hmm. And I think we haven't really spent a ton of time on talking about Manchester United and what a tire fire that's become. Just the team getting booed off the pitch after another 1-0 loss where the offense was basically inept. Louis van Gaal in real jeopardy of losing his job. The pro soccer, I think it was Pro Soccer Talk, was it, that well, you would know since you work for them.
Yeah.
But there was rumors of that letter of Jose Mourinho,
right,
saying, like, this is what I'm going to do when I go to Manchester United. Like, basically a blueprint for his plan on how he would change things.
Well, and I think that at times when that first strikes you, you think of it as disrespectful. But when you hear that Louis van Gaal was reported to have tried to quit twice over Christmas,
yeah,
and Ed Woodward tried to talk, because Mourinho and van Gaal are close.
Yeah.
So to me, that was, you know, that was extremely interesting to kind of consider what might happen there.
How much legitimacy do you think there is to that happening from Mourinho's standpoint? Because it seems like something Mourinho would do.
He would do it. I think almost everyone at Manchester United would be interested in it. The problem I think you're going to run into is, and I would say this open until he is non-functioning or dead, Sir Alex Ferguson being there,
yeah,
is,
it's true,
he's still a part of, I mean, when van Gaal was hired, it was the articles about how, yes, I approve of this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the stories of David Moyes going over to Sir Alex Ferguson's house and Fergie just being like, you're going to be the next manager at Manchester United. Well, cool. I'm at Everton right now,
yeah,
but I'd be interested in talking to my boss. No, you'll be taking this job, son.
Yeah.
All right.
It's weird how there's no tampering like that.
No.
You know, I feel like in American sports, that would be an immediate no-no and grounds for some kind of punishment. Whereas,
right,
if it's the deity of Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, it's not a big deal at all.
I think it's curious, United, to judge them, to take a look at them, because they live in this... they live in their own universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that the same way that Real Madrid does, the same way that, and this usually, in this instance, we're talking about teams that have traditionally won, but it's the similar, it's not all that different from the universe of Bills fans or Cubs fans who are used to losing.
Mm-hmm.
The standards for United are so incredibly high from their fans that I find it almost laughable.
Mm-hmm.
They had 2 draws and 2 wins in their last 4 games. They lose 1 game. In
boot off the pitch
in the final minutes to Charlie Austin, who's known to do that, and boot off the pitch.
Yeah.
It is almost, and I think we've seen this at Liverpool as well. There's an almost untenable nature to being a long time star there. It's amazing that someone like Rooney has lasted as long,
yeah,
as he has. That guys like, and I think Rooney, maybe because he's still connected to the old guard, but when he's gone. We know Giggs is still sitting there, but he's gone, and Scholes and all these players who are gone. At some point, who do you identify with Manchester United? When they leave, who is the guy? Chris Smalling?
Well,
who I love, but...
They want it to be... I think it's De Gea, but...
Sure.
I think they want it to be Martial. I mean, they invested a ton of money in him. He,
right,
is 19. I mean, that... But it's still too early to he's not ready to take that kind of a mantle, you know, to be the guy that everyone identifies Manchester United,
right, and it
with.
It doesn't have to be an offensive player, as we've seen in the past,
yeah,
right?
But maybe it's Schweinsteiger, but how much time does Schweinsteiger
not
have
long.
Left?
Yeah. I don't know if he's there after this year.
He looks like a shell, you know, a,
yeah,
shell of what he was. And I didn't think that was a good move to begin with, but that was...
It was interesting.
Yeah.
But again, it's funny because a year before that, I would have told you, well, that's not bad. So, I have to look at that team and wonder. Fan bases in general in England must be incredibly annoying right now to be a part of. To be a part of where I think about the daily media that we have here in the United States and talking about the Bills and the Sabres and how at times you just want to walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
In England, their perceptions are completely flipped upside down right now in this wild season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are having a very difficult time even worldwide, trying to figure out, are these teams in this position for good? Is this what it's going to be like, a top-to-bottom melee? There will always be room for a Leicester City, et cetera.
Yeah, remember in early December, I think it was, we're talking like how long is Leicester going to be able to do this?
Right.
And Leicester's still sitting 3 points atop the Premier League, and we're, what, heading almost into February, right?
They had two horrific stretches of schedule to navigate, yep. One right around the holidays, and they've done that.
The Liverpool City stretch.
More or less. Yeah, they didn't do a fantastic job there, but the rest of the league didn't pull away from them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now they have another one coming up. I can't remember exactly what it is, but I will tell you momentarily. It's Liverpool goes to King Power Stadium next, then on the weekend. So within 4 days, then Leicester goes to Manchester City. And the following weekend, if I recall correctly, it's not Spurs because they just played them, it's Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
So Leicester and Sunderland are both going through similar, at different sides of the table, just horrific stretches. If Leicester makes it through this within shouting distance of the top, I'm not saying at the top where they have a 3-point lead right now, but if they make it through these three games, even 3 points back of the title, which is completely reasonable, then we have to absolutely say that they could win the league. And that is, I mean, it's hilarious.
You had a really fun exercise last week where we took players from various leagues and talked and chose the toughest players. Well, I have an exercise for this week, and it's not.
Oh boy,
it's not nearly as
exercise me, Suge.
Not nearly as exciting as it was last week. I apologize for that in advance, but I want to talk about the major, what we consider to be the major English Premier clubs, and give them a grade as a whole
on their season so far.
Through 23 games, and I think we may differ. I hope we differ. Honestly.
Yeah, I hope so, too. It'd be pretty boring if we're just like, no, you're correct, Ben.
Agreed.
Next team.
Yeah, it'll be uncomfortable if that happens, so let's try to avoid it. Let's start at second place. Manchester City, 44 points, 3 back of Leicester. What grade would you give City?
Well, I'll tell you what. I would put them in a firm B+ with the possibility of an A-. Mm-hmm. You'd like to see them higher. I wonder if it was any other team leading them, if it was a big team leading them by 3 points, if you wouldn't give Manchester City an A.
Yeah.
But because it's Leicester above them, there's that. Company's been hurt after looking like a resurgent piece of the puzzle. Yaya has been a mess from time to time, but still shown those moments of brilliance. I think they're a solid team, and I would not be surprised to see them come out on top.
I was impressed how well they survived without Aguero. I think Wilfred Bony is a very important part of that team, even though he doesn't get the chances. You know, obviously Aguero's going to be your first choice striker, and he can play alone up top, which allows you to play that absolutely loaded midfield that they have. But I mean, I haven't really been impressed by Kevin De Bruyne recently.
He's gone through an off period, but he was lights out at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and I like his energy, but I just, him and Navas and guys that I don't really think are, like, I see Navas as a squad player, but not a starter.
Yeah, he kind of defies, when you're watching him, his stats defy what you see him do. I think he has the second most assists of any player over the last 3 years at Man City.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's hard to debate that.
Right.
But at the same time, have you ever watched a game and been like, man, that Navas was unbelievable today?
I haven't. I absolutely haven't. And I think missing Zabaleta has played a role for City. And injuries have taken their toll on a lot of these teams, and I think that's going to be something we'll go back to quite a bit. But I would give City, I would give them a B.
Okay.
I mean, they're lucky to be tied for second place with Arsenal. 13-5-5 right now is their record. And like, I think that's definitely underachieving.
Yes.
And I don't think it's weird being in Pellegrini's shoes too. Not that I'm actually in his shoes, but if I were to be in his shoes, they'd probably not smell great.
That's correct.
You know, it's interesting that he has Pep Guardiola basically looming over his head. You know, that the idea of Guardiola, or maybe Mourinho, but probably Guardiola, who, regardless of what City does, and City is still alive in four different competitions, mm-hmm. how many of those do you think he has to, say Guardiola's interested, but how many of those do you think Pellegrini would have to win in order to be like, my job's secure because I won so much?
Well, I think it depends on which ones. If he wins the Champions League, he's not going anywhere.
Anywhere, yeah.
Well, he shouldn't. He should feel aggrieved if he went somewhere. If he wins the Premier League, otherwise those other two have to go together. I don't think the League Cup or the FA Cup really is going to be much for City fans to rest their hats on. So.
Yeah, that's true. Let's move on to Arsenal, tied with City for second place with 44 points, also 13-5-5.
Yeah, I think before today you would have given, or before this weekend you would have not even, your heart, you wouldn't have skipped a beat in giving them an A.
Yeah.
But the last thing that's on our minds right now is a disappointing loss. But then again, I still give them an A because I look at them and I watch that game, and they still, they looked like they were playing 11v11 when Giroud had already subbed off because Mertesacker got the red card.
Yeah.
So I thought they looked the better threat to score for most of that game after Costa scored for Chelsea.
I think they've had their chances, you know, mm-hmm. to... And this is something...
They could have a healthy lead right now.
This is, yeah, exactly. This is something you mentioned earlier where Leicester feels like they're at the top because no one has overtaken them.
Mm.
And I think that's... But there are really good stories coming out of Arsenal. I think Ozil has really, you know, cemented his place as being an EPL superstar. I know people were questioning him in the past, but I haven't heard anything about that.
The buyback clause is very interesting. I don't know if you saw that come out. Apparently there is still I didn't see the number because I didn't click on it, but there's still a buyback clause from Real Madrid that they could activate during any window.
Wow, really?
And they would pretty much have, I don't know if it has to happen after a year, but with their transfer ban coming up, I doubt it's going to happen
now.
That
would be wild if it did, though.
It sure would.
And is Petr Cech maybe the best, or one of the best offseason signings?
I would say absolutely. And Chelsea fans have to be wondering at that, sticking with Courtois, and whose call was that? Was it Jose Mourinho? And if it was, why would you let someone that you could visualize any scenario that you'd fire them by December, why would you let someone decide between a club legend and a young guy who's very, very promising and very good? Courtois has been very good, but made some mistakes the other day, that's for sure.
That back line has been interesting to me, too. And I think the back line is actually, you could make an argument that it's just as important as that midfield, and just as important to earning that A grade in your mind.
For Arsenal.
And I mean, you wouldn't expect Nacho Monreal to suddenly be one of the best outside backs in England.
And I've liked Koscielny a great deal. I think he probably doesn't get the love he deserves. Plus, just since he's playing next to a giant oak tree.
Yeah, and I don't really like Mertesacker, and I don't really like.
I used to. I think he's a step slower, and he was always kind of a half step too slow to start with, but he made up for it with this athleticism and this tank-like quality.
Yeah, and there's room for those tank-like players in the EPL still,
you know,
and that's the one thing that still hasn't really translated to the modern center back. You'd think that the modern center back, the guy, let's say he's 6'3", but also fast and athletic, and not like this tree who's rooted to the ground necessarily.
I think about Kurt Zuma for that.
Yeah,
who was
yeah.
awesome in Star Wars.
Yes.
I love Kurt Zuma for that, and I feel like they need to find a partner that works with him instead of trying to think, who are we going to fit with John Terry?
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Thanks. Yeah, from the first preview I saw of the movie, I was like, wow, Kurt Zuma.
failed stormtrooper.
Yeah, this is a tough break. It's a tough break for him.
That's great. Tottenham, I think, being the next one, I would give Tottenham, I hate to steal your thunder by going first, but I would give Tottenham an A.
It's hard not to give them an A+, but that also shows the difficulty with judging Spurs in general.
Yeah.
Because they have missed just as many opportunities to seize this mantle. And if you're a Spurs fan, you're happy because they're there and they're within striking distance, and therein lies the rub.
Yeah.
Because they just as easily, with their talent, could be the top team in the league.
But look at like the emerging players who've come from that league and the fearlessness of being able to put somebody like Tommy Carroll into the regular 11, you know,
sure.
and even
the fearlessness of, and I know he came from MK Dons and was highly regarded, but the fearlessness of throwing a 19-year-old into a team that wants to qualify for the Champions League, and Dele Alli has been fantastic.
Goal of the year, probably, you'd say.
So far, yeah. I would have to think. I loved every second of that. I hate using this term, but this is very accurate. It was sexy. That was a sexy goal.
I thought you were going to go with wonder goal.
No, I don't like wonder goal. I don't like Golazo.
Yeah, I don't like Golazo. Is a little bit too much for me, too.
A little over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Screamer, I like. That was a screamer.
Worldie.
Worldie is a tough one.
Brian Knapp was a big user of Worldie.
Former
FC Buffalo midfielder Brian Knapp. Love to say Worldie. I had to ask somebody what it meant first because it was so bizarre, but it's all right. Somebody told me eventually.
Who else we got before this commercial break?
Well, let's see. We already discussed United. We have to talk about Liverpool.
That's a tough grade.
Yeah.
Especially because if you're grading them, even if you're grading them with Klopp,
yeah,
his personality masks over. That Norwich game was a crime scene.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch, but that was 5-4. They went down 3-1 on some ugly goals to a Norwich team that is not good.
No.
But at the same time, you know, his glasses break. He has the quote of the year. Did you see the glasses quote?
What was the quote?
So Lallana scores, and there's a big celebration.
Yep.
And Klopp gets right in the mix, and Benteke hugs him, and his glasses break. And it's hilarious. And they ask him about it, and he's just kind of rambling, as Klopp is known to do. And I'm going to screw up the quote, I'm sure. But he said, "I had a second pair of glasses, but it's hard to find glasses without glasses."
That's a very Kloppian quote, without a doubt.
Well, then today he had his backup glasses on, and he made the quip that he kind of looks a bit like a serial killer. And to which a lot of people online responded, like, "You do all the time."
Yeah, I know. It doesn't matter what glasses you're wearing. It's those weird stares that you give people.
And your gigantic teeth. And then Chelsea, I think, is obviously enough. We'll go back to a grade for Liverpool. Oh, yeah. I think I would go B minus.
Mm.
But at the same time, they have had some weird injuries.
Yeah.
So.
Sturridge. Wait, is Sturridge ever going to play again?
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
That's scary.
Chelsea,
all right. You know, we don't have to talk about Chelsea. We talk about Chelsea enough. Probably should head to a break.
They're a D minus. We're going to take a break. Andy Edwards will join us. If you want to get a feel for who he is from Pro Soccer Talk, go on Twitter, Andy Ed MLS. So, you know, he loves the league, and he'll be. He'll be a good talk on that out in Kansas City. Big Sporting KC guy, so lots to talk about. We will be back. And if you don't like Jurgen Klinsmann, I believe you'll like his comments on the men's national team. not Jurgen's, but Andy Edwards. We'll be back in a minute here on WBNY. It's happening. Nick Mendola, Ben Sugimoto here. It's the Football Club of Buffalo show on WBNY 91.3 FM on your radio dial. If you're driving around and heading home from work or listening online, we welcome you to talk about whatever is on your mind. We will have Andy Edwards joining us soon. I'm going to shoot him a text the next time you say something to make sure he's got the Eastern time on lockdown.
Sure. I mean, I'm excited to hear some things from him too, especially, you know, he's going to be talking I guess predominantly about the MLS, but also the U.S. men's national team. But there's a lot of things that have gone on this offseason in Major League Soccer. And you're wondering, what I'm wondering, I guess, is how the two teams that were in MLS Cup, how their offseasons have gone, how they're shaping up for next year, Portland and Columbus, obviously those two teams. But also a lot of goalies on the move, the dawn of targeted allocation money and, and what that means, TAM. And players from MLS going to Mexico, you know. That
was, very bizarre.
The LA Galaxy losing both Juninho and Omar Gonzalez to south of the border. So there's a lot of interesting topics, and now we do have Andy Edwards on the phone.
We'll welcome him in a moment. It's one of those things, MLS is so loaded with storylines that I almost, like, I know we have a guest, and he's the expert, and he's the guy we want to ask about, and yet I'm like, what about my opinions? But Andy Edwards from Pro Soccer Talk joins us. He hosts a podcast as well, and I'm totally blanking on the name, but Andy will tell us right now. Andy, how are you?
Nick, I'm doing good, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. You know how it's like when you get off a seven-hour shift of trying to find stories on a slow day. So happy to be just talking about it instead of writing about it.
I can understand that. Last night was even slower, so I sympathize greatly.
Indeed. So to give you a little bit of a rundown, we talk soccer here from a local standpoint, but it's the time of year where there are a lot of, with the transfer window and guys training abroad and training camp starting for MLS, that it's sometimes hard to put it into perspective. So I wanted to get someone like you who follows the league. I mean, is it fair to say it is your favorite league to follow?
I've always been a huge proponent of having a strong domestic league here in the United States. If you look at generally any country in the world that has a strong national team, has a strong, you know, history of the game in their country, at the very ground level, it typically begins with a domestic league, and whether it's the South American countries, which eventually end up being feeder clubs to Europe, you know, there is at least that pipeline of talent coming through. So, yeah, MLS has always been something that I've really been interested in, and you know, it's that's a really weird place now, as I'm sure we'll talk about, where they're trying to grow really, really, really fast. And you almost have to wonder, are they trying to go too fast right now and you know, trying to get ahead of themselves? So it's an interesting time. But, yeah, this is if you're just now getting in on the whole MLS thing, you've picked a pretty good time to do it.
totally agree with that. Ben, I know you had some kind of big picture questions, and then maybe that's a good place to start.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess, how's it going, Andy? I'm Ben.
He's Ben.
I am Ben. Yeah. What I want to know is, just sort of piggybacking off what you said, is MLS growing at a rate that is too fast to be making sound decisions, maybe? Like, is this something where you see an uncomfortable, maybe unsustainable pace in how quickly they want to go into the future?
Well, I think with the way that they currently structure the league and how the roster rules limit teams, how much money you can spend on players with the salary cap, the number of international players that you can sign, I think it would be too quickly. But as the league has shown over the last, year or so, the introduction of targeted allocation money, which essentially at the end of the day is just a raising of the salary cap, mm-hmm. done in a very strange MLS way that you feel like almost overcomplicates it unnecessarily. And so it's a bit annoying from that standpoint. The pool of American players, which is what you obviously want the league to be based upon, mm-hmm. and want to be the foundation for the league and what it's going to be going forward and trending toward younger guys, there's probably not enough talent at the moment to keep the league at a high quality if you're going to continue to add in essentially four teams every 4 years, as they're going to do before 2020. And then by 2024, they want to be up to 28 teams. And so they're moving a little quickly, but at the same time, you have to strike while the iron is hot, while the money is there, the demand for these cities and for these prospective ownership groups. If they're willing to pay $100 million to get in right now, MLS would be crazy to turn that down and say, well, we're just moving too fast. You bring another $100 million into the general pool of money that the league operates on, you can find a way around maybe expanding too quickly and diluting the talent pool. But at the end of the day, you know, as I said, it has to be about the American players, developing the young American players for the future, not just for, you know, the sake of the league and where it's going and being sustainable, but also for the national team picture as well. You know, those two things, people have argued that, you know, it's not MLS's job to produce talent for the national team. It's not the national team's job to cater to MLS and for them to work together. But in an ideal world, they do need to do so. And the relationship between those two groups over the last, couple years or so, it's not been the greatest.
Yeah, Andy, covering the league and writing about the league and watching the league at times as a sports fan feels, especially because it exists in this gigantic global soccer landscape as well. You almost feel sick to your stomach in a way where you're going back and forth. You're that kid in the ticket booth at Chuck E. Cheese trying to grasp as many tickets as you can and make sense of what's going on around you. And I'm not just talking about confusing terms like targeted allocation money. I'm talking about when you don't have a team in every market, it becomes difficult. Think about a soccer outpost in a sense here in Buffalo, where we've got Toronto 2 hours to the north. It would at a maximum drive, and at times that is our natural guidance. Columbus is the closest American team. Philadelphia, New York. These are all markets that, as Buffalo sports fans, we wouldn't be drawn to. Buffalo sports fans don't want to root for a Toronto. So until that team is in their market, MLS has this task of making us interested. And I'm not talking like me and Ben, who obviously care a great deal about the league and are a prime viewer. I'm talking Johnny sports fans, so to speak. And I think that's a challenge that Don Garber has to keep in perspective at all times. I don't know if you know what I'm kind of getting at here, but that is... You don't have a single market with the equivalent, with the maybe the exception of a 35-year-old guy in Seattle or Vancouver or Portland that has been supporting this team their entire life. And just the book that will be written on the opening stanza of MLS is going to be one of the most intoxicating books of all time.
Mm. For sure. And I'll give you the number one example of what you're talking about right there. And it's something that hits close to home for myself. It's St. Louis. The fact that that city, with the history of soccer, doesn't have an MLS team. You know, it just now has a one-year-old USL team. The rivalry, the natural rivalry from day one that would exist between the city of St. Louis and the city of Kansas City, where I'm from, everyone here where I live, everyone that I know is crying out for St. Louis to get a team. Everyone in St. Louis is crying out to have a team. You know, the kind of support that I think that would be there if there was an ownership group in place. If you look at a map of the U.S., it's really the last big box that's left to be ticked. The last major sports city that you think of when you think of pretty much any sports league, you know, obviously with the NFL now leaving there, you know, that's a bit of an exception. But St. Louis sports is a very, very popular thing. And for them to not have a team, you know, I think that's one of the things that's the very top of the to-do list for MLS and for Don Garber. You know, like I said, though, they've just not had an owner or a prospective owner over the last 15 years that is willing to put any kind of money behind a project. And you would have thought, you know, maybe Stan Kroenke will. He, you know, he owns the Rams and is involved heavily with Arsenal, but he already owns the Colorado Rapids. And so, you know, with MLS trying to get away from having the same groups own multiple teams, it's been a bit of a conflict of interest for them. So that's the biggest one for me, because I know a ton of people from St. Louis that have moved to Kansas City and made a life for themselves. And while they can appreciate Kansas City sports teams and they identify a bit with having Sporting Kansas City as the team in the city where they live and the closest to where they're from, it's not a full-fledged, you know, full-hearted support in the way that it would be, even living here in Kansas City, the way that they would feel for a St. Louis team.
What's so interesting to me when St. Louis you're talking about, I don't remember the exact number, but it was almost half of the players or a quarter of the players, a third of the players, a significant portion from that 1950 World Cup team and the greatest game ever played were based from St. Louis. I mean, there is a terrific obstacle that American soccer has to face. And I don't mean American soccer so much as MLS. It's St. Louis, you're right. They're a shining example. But I think about Cleveland and Detroit and these sports hungry cities that devour whatever is put in front of them. When are they ready? Are they ready? How do they exist when soccer is very much a regional loyal sport where you like to root for the team in your backyard? This country's gigantic. It's a dice roll. Who's going to exist where and what is too big and what is too much for the public to take in? It's like I said, it's head spinning, Andy.
Well, and you have to ask yourself, well, what league should they have a team in? You know, you mentioned Cleveland, you know, a place like Cincinnati. Any of these cities that are not major markets, but if you think about in the context of what the way, say, England is set up, you know, as just a very general sure. example, not trying to emulate what they've done, but there are multiple teams in the same city, and we don't have, I don't think, the demand for that. But we have these lower divisions now, and USL being so closely partnered with MLS, you know, I almost feel like MLS is, and I'm sure probably a lot of people have had this thought, MLS is using USL as an audition mm-hmm. for, okay, well, you say you're interested in having an MLS team. Well, go start one in USL, start in the lower division, show that you can build a fan base and that you can have some support and you can show promise with an on-field product that's at least going to be decent. And then show that you have the financial ability to come in and pay us what we want, and then we'll consider you. And if you look at Orlando City coming up just last year, and you've got Sacramento, who has made huge strides in just 2 years as an expansion club in USL, they're definitely going to be in that next wave of four teams before 2024. It's a great model, I think, for MLS too, even if it's not bringing teams into MLS, to continue to help grow just the sport in general in the country, you know, dangle that carrot, if you will, in front of people a little bit and really get them motivated to get going. And if you don't end up with an MLS franchise, you know, USL is going to continue to grow and grow and grow. And I think it's going to be a really, really, really strong league in the next, you know, not even 10 years from now, 5 years from now, if not just a couple, the way that they're expanding and creating so many soccer playing jobs for so many players that we have in this country that otherwise would have been completely passed over. And as soon as they turn 18 or they're done with college, they have absolutely no hope of playing anywhere. That's changing now. And there's so many guys, especially in this country, you know, maybe don't get that early instruction to really develop as a player by the time of 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, and they get passed over. And late bloomers shows how many great players that we could have had, you know, even if it's not on the national team level, just in MLS, guys that 25, 26 finally become a finished product and can be a really serviceable, if not quality player, you know, having the stronger lower division and bringing teams to more cities like the ones that you mentioned, that's only going to help a ton as we go forward.
It's a great proving ground. It's also a great stall tactic for the league. Ben, I know you had a couple of questions.
I do. This is also harkening back to something you said a couple minutes ago. How threatening do you think the connections between USL and MLS and NASL and NPSL are? Like, is this only one survives kind of thing? Or what do you think that those two, I guess, affiliations mean for the future of U.S. soccer?
Well, obviously the money lies with the MLS-USL pact. It'll be interesting, though, because, you know, are these standalone leagues? Are these combined leagues that, you know, have fully gone into business together and are pooling everything together? You know, how much credibility, I guess, can you say that any of them have if they're supposed to be the standalone competitions? But, you know, MLS is obviously using USL, and USL is obviously using MLS, just the connection to the top division league in the country to get people interested in their teams. You know, how far are they willing to go once MLS reaches 28 teams in 2024? Do we see some kind of MLS-specific MLS 1, MLS 2 promotion relegation type thing? Do they partner with say USL and each have two leagues of their own? It's really interesting to see where they're going to go with this, and obviously not having any insight of my own. At the end of the day, I think the only thing that really, really matters is as the demand and the interest in the sport continues to grow, you know, they continue to create more options for more people, more places, and as I said, the most important part, in my opinion, more jobs for guys that want to play this sport and see themselves having a future. So, like, you know, as I said at the very, very beginning, it is the most interesting time in American soccer history. And I would have said that 12 months ago. I would have said that 24 months ago. I'd have said that 36 months ago. It just continues to get bigger and bigger and more interesting. And, you know, you have to give them credit, I think, at the end of the day. They do continue to grow this every single year. You've not seen MLS or really any league, maybe outside of NASL, plateau since, say, the 2010 World Cup, when you kind of feel like everybody went all in and said, okay, look at these TV ratings for this thing. It was done right on television. People really got into it. The U.S. team had a historic moment, a memorable moment, you know, had a great run. We're going to go all in on this. And you know, the leagues and the owners have responded, you know, putting their money where their mouth is, and it's just going to continue to get better and better.
Andy, what would you consider to be the biggest personnel moment of the offseason? And I'm going to say this, and your answer can't be Jordan Morris, because we spend a lot of time talking about Jordan Morris here. But other than Jordan Morris, whether it's something happening from the draft, whether it's Chris Pontius, whether it's Will Johnson, there's a lot of stuff that happened that, you know, maybe is not a Jordan Morris-sized decision or move, but also kind of shapes MLS 2016 in a certain way. What's maybe one or two moves where you're like, whoa, that was a pretty big deal. That's really changed the complexion of the league.
Yeah, just really quickly to have my take on Jordan Morris, I think he's being overhyped a little bit for at least the first year or so. So I wouldn't have gone with that one, even if you had presented it as an option. I'm gonna ride the fence here a little bit. I'm gonna go with a group of moves, and I just absolutely love what Toronto FC have done this offseason. The fact that they've gone out and, well, first of all, they retained all three designated players that they had from last season. It'll be year three for Michael Bradley. It'll be year two for both Josie Altidore and Sebastian Giovinco. Retaining all three of those guys, number one, but then the pieces that they brought in and added around them, whether it's Drew Moore at center back, it's Steven Betashore at right back, it's Clint Irwin in goal, as a young guy who's still a bit of a prospect, but in a lot of MLS experience has shown to be a really, really good goalkeeper and a guy that I think could be there for, you know, 3, 5, 7, 8, 10 years. Who knows? He's going to be very, very good. Addressing needs, finally, in Toronto. We've not seen them do that. We've seen them go out year after year and spend big money on guys that, you know, while talented, you're not really sure that they need it, and try to build a team around guys that don't really fit together just because they have the big name and they can sell tickets. And so to go out and do that, and then on top of that, bring home Will Johnson, who, you know, the captain of the Canadian national team, a guy who, again, kind of fits into what they're trying to do, I think will fit tactically and form maybe might be the best midfield three in the entire league if they decide to go with it, with a midfield three, and, you know, push Giovinco out wide just a little bit with between Michael Bradley, Will Johnson, and Benoit Cheyrou. Benoit Cheyrou was incredibly underrated in 2015, and what he provided, defensive cover in front of that back line. I would be terrified to think about what their goals conceded number would have been last year without him sitting in front of there. So I just think they're really strong all over the field now, and we've never been able to say that. So with the talent at the top end of the roster, this could be a really, really huge year for them.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how much MLS, looking at some of the action that has gone on off the field, I wonder how much MLS is kind of cringing at the thought of an all-Canadian MLS Cup. I think that has to be a concern, especially with Drogba coming back.
Well, and I'm a huge, huge fan of the Whitecaps.
Me too.
You know, way out west as well. And, you know, I basically every week I find some way to shoehorn my love for watching the Vancouver Whitecaps into a story or a recap or something. And you know, they've made more nice moves during the offseason as well, whether it's Masato Kudo, who, you know, a 25-year-old guy who's got nearly 100 professional goals scored in a top division in Japan. He'll push Octavio Rivero, who really plateaued the second half of last year. You bring in Christian Bolaños, World Cup experience, 31 years old, for an attacking core that's really, really young, whether it's Kakuta Mane or it's Christian Chichera. And they didn't really have a ton of maturity. Darren Maddox in that group as well didn't have a ton of maturity, or I felt like ever a plan B in 2015 when it wasn't really working, getting out in space and attacking on the counter. Now they've got a little something different out there on the right wing. I think that they're going to be a much more difficult team to shut down, because really all you had to do last year, just sit deep on them. Don't let Pedro Morales hit those long balls out in space to the guys on the wing. They're going to try and cut inside and get a shot off. That was plan A, that was plan B, that was plan C. So they've got a lot more, I think, going for them in 2016.
I will be remiss. We didn't want to keep you on the air forever, but at the same time, a conversation I wanted to have with you and wanted to for a while, but we have to type. And that has to do with reasonable expectations for the men's national team. Obviously, it's been a massive disappointment this year, to say the least. And you can only pin so much on, you know, tactics or whatever. It's the Jims and Joes more often than not. What do you think is a reasonable expectation for the United States men's national team year in and year out?
Well, I'll start with this. I'll say at some point between the Gold Cup last year and the loss to Mexico in the Confederations Cup playoff and the turn of the new year, because Jurgen Klinsmann went dark and silent for a couple of months, and it was actually really, really pleasant to not have to either hear him talk about anything or have to talk about what he's talking about. And so that was a nice break, and I appreciated that. But I've lowered my expectations, you know, between, you know, those couple of I guess, disastrous events in 2015. You know, we had looked at the national team coming off of, you know, going all the way back to 2010, getting to the round of 16, the momentum that the sport had in the country, the momentum that the domestic league had in turning out players for the national team, and the player pool was growing and growing, and we felt like it was getting stronger and stronger. And then, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann takes over and shows this real preference for the guys that go test themselves in Europe. But then he takes, you know, almost half of a team from MLS to the World Cup. So, you know, everything that he says goes against what he does, and everything that he does goes against what he says. And he goes against what you know, everything that he's ever said, he has in action gone completely against it. And so, you know, looking towards like this summer, the fact that they're going to play in the Copa America, they're going to be playing against the likes of Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, I'm not going to put too much stock in that tournament. I'm really not, because we are not, I don't feel like, at least on a level where, after struggling so much with Haiti and Jamaica and Panama last summer, that we even need to be worrying about that at the moment. The goal number one, two, three, four, five, and six right now has to be just getting through World Cup qualifying, getting yourself into the hexagonal, getting yourself in a position to make, what would it be now, eight World Cups in a row, you know, obviously the most consecutive in U.S. history, and being at a point where there's so many young guys that are coming into the national team now, and a lot of them are in this January camp, whether it's a Will Trapp or the Darlington Nagbe or the young crop of goalkeepers, blooding them in, giving them as much experience as they could possibly get, trying to move on from a handful of the holdovers that have, you know, consistently been in the team and are now on the very wrong side of 30 or 32 years old. I guess Jermaine Jones is the first one that comes to mind in that regard, and Howard as well. You know, we've got a vast pool of goalkeepers. I just want to see something a little bit different from them in 2016. And I think that Jurgen Klinsmann has shown a willingness to do that over the entirety of his tenure. But I also want to see something a little bit different from him. I want to see less of these vague and veiled comments about really, really large, grandiose concepts. You know, guys shouldn't be playing in MLS. They should be playing in Europe. That's a very, very vague statement. And when he came out last week and hammered Benny Failhaber, really, like, took his stick out and hammered Benny Failhaber into the ground with his comments. Well, I had him in national team camp, and he just wasn't good enough. He wasn't up to par. I appreciated that. While I disagree that he's not an international player, I appreciated that he came out and actually spoke his mind. He actually gave an opinion and addressed something. And so, you know, I'll appreciate that. I can be cool with Jurgen Klinsmann. I've said a lot of, you know, not so great things about him in the past year, and I think he deserved every single one of them. But if he gets us to another World Cup and it's a decent showing at least, and doesn't set the program back, I guess that's where I'm at. Don't set the program back.
Well,
the last 2.5 years of your employment.
And Andy, I think that's where I have been noncommittal. In a certain way, this year has been brutal. The Confederation Cup playoff, it's literally maybe the worst game I've seen them play on the whole in a big spot since Bob Bradley's last Gold Cup final, where they got absolutely annihilated by Mexico. So I think part of me is saying, wow, this has been a disappointing year with some bright spots, but we have done this dance in the past. I know you and I had a discussion online, or maybe we both just commented on the same post in the past. Even in this World Cup qualifying, this little first round that the Americans always get through, there's always a speed bump somewhere, playing under the lights, tripping on logs in the middle of the pitch and tying a game they should have won. However, if you're terrible in the Copa America this year, if you stumble through qualifying this time around, it becomes a pattern and not maybe just something that happens every once in a while.
Yeah, for sure. And we have to remember the last World Cup qualifying cycle, the last game of the group stage of this round, not even the hexagonal. It was a must-win game here in Kansas City against Guatemala. So, yeah, it will happen, and it's not a, you know, oh, let's jump off the bridge moment if and when it does. But it's about how, to me, this round is about how they look in the games that they do win. It's not about the result. Because we know they're going to get through it. How do you look in the games that you're winning? Are you overwhelming these teams that you should be beating handily, or are you really struggling to these 2-1 victories at home, these 1-0 victory at home? If we see that, then I think it's cause for concern. But on paper, they're going to get through this round. They're almost certainly going to get through the hex once we get to it next year. It's just about the performance, and you want to see them assert a little bit of dominance over some of these much, much, like, exponentially smaller nations in CONCACAF that for years we have beat up on, and sure, they're progressing as well, but we have to do the same.
Yeah, I had this thought, and we're going to wrap it up here, but I had this thought back at the Gold Cup. I was up in Toronto and watching some guy from, I want to say it was El Salvador, and their best player, Pablo Puñed. I actually look up, well, where's he from? What's his story? He looks fantastic out there. And he's one of the players who had been recruited. He played at St. John's with former FC Buffalo player Josh Faga. But these guys are now, these smaller nations are are Klinsmanning a lot of the American college players. A kid at Canisius here, was it AC, LaFleur, ended up representing
Belize
because these smaller nations are like, hey, you were born here, come play for us. And it's just, it's wild. It's the Wild West, Andy Edwards.
Absolutely, and it's good for CONCACAF, though. You know, it's more jobs for guys to pick up and take, higher quality. The better that these other countries get, the better that the U.S. is going to have to continue to get, the better Mexico to continue to get to stay on top of the region. Obviously, that's where you want to be. You want to be the big boy, but you need somebody to test yourself as well. So it's not a bad thing by any means that maybe some of these other countries are catching up to the United States. You just want to see a reaction from them where they, in turn, go do the same themselves.
All right, we have to go. Andy, thanks for joining us. Hopefully Kyle Larin doesn't tear up the United States in the next coming weeks. And we appreciate you coming out with us today, and thanks for staying as long as you did.
No, not a problem at all. I appreciate you having me.
Andy Edwards is Andy Ed MLS on the Twitters. You can find him there, and he works at Pro Soccer Talk. Ben, your parting thought.
My parting thought?
You only get one.
Only get one, huh? I'm not as anti-Jurgen Klinsmann as our friend Andy Edwards is. But I don't really, I'm not a big fan of him either.
Yeah.
I just don't quite have that level
that,
of...
That does show the vitriol at play there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a fun ride. A couple games coming in here for the United States. So certainly be at MSK for those. And cheering on the United States of America.
Go Yanks. Yeah.
Go Yanks. Ben, I'll see you next week. We will have a lot of exciting news. In fact, I'll throw a little tidbit out there. I got off the phone with, there has never really been any question, but I got off the phone with All High today.
Ooh.
All our requested home games were all set.
Oh, correct.
So it looks like the schedule should be very, very close to coming out.
Nice. Great architecture there.
I was going to say Ansel Adams, but I meant Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yep.
I'm sure they're related.